Hi, Nicole. How are you?
I'm great. It is such a pleasure and an honor to speak with you.
Oh, thank you very much.
The first thing I guess we should talk about is what the president is going to do tomorrow night. He's going to go to West Point, and all indications are that he's going to announce that he's sending another 30,000 or so troops to Afghanistan. What are your thoughts on that?
If that is in fact the case, I am disappointed. I think that that's a bad decision for a number of reasons. And the first rather common sense reason that is we're going to end up spending just in Afghanistan alone about $100 billion a year if he expands our forces there. And this takes place in the middle of the worst recession that this country has experienced since the 1930s. We got a quarter of the children in this country now on food stamps. And I will tell you that every dollar being spent in Afghanistan is going to result in a dollar not being spent in creating decent-paying jobs in this country, rebuilding our infrastructure, educating our kids. Number two, what I worry about is we are now doing exactly what we did in Iraq, a war which I strongly opposed, and that is we are Americanizing this war. If, in fact, and I believe it is true, that it's important that we not see the Taliban prevail, but and Pakistan are destabilized. But if that's important for the United States, it's important for Europe, it's important for Russia, it's important for China. Where is the rest of the world in terms of their commitment of troops and money? Why is this simply becoming an American war? So there are a number of reasons to object to the escalating of the war, and I have some real concerns about it.
Well, and you're not alone. So what do we do? I mean, President Obama, we know, is not a warmonger. Why is he going this route? I mean, he seemed to be taking in lots of information. He took his time in making this decision. Why do you think he's doing this?
Well, it's best to ask him. I really don't want to speculate the answer is I don't know.
Yeah.
I think his actions in a number of areas have been disappointing to many progressives in this country, and this is just another example of that. So, but there are a lot of reasons to be worried about expanding the war in Afghanistan, no question about that. But one of the reasons that we've got to focus on is, trust me, every dollar that we're spending, and it's going to be a lot of dollars going into Afghanistan, is a dollar not going into the needs of working families and the middle class in this country.
Exactly. Well, Congress holds the purse strings, do
right.
they not?
Yes, it
so,
does.
So now, can you walk us through what happens if the president does tomorrow night say, all right, we're going to send another 30,000 troops and we're going to get, 5,000 from NATO or whatever.
Right.
What happens next?
Well, I think you're going to begin to see on the various committees and on the floor of the House and the Senate a lot of discussion that says, sorry, Mr. President, you can't do that. We are going to oppose funding for additional troops. In fact, quite the contrary, we want to hear from you about an exit strategy, about how and when we're going to be bringing our troops home. We want to hear some real specification about what our goals are. You know, we went into Afghanistan, and I voted for that, because Osama bin Laden attacked the United States, and the Taliban refused to allow us to get him as a criminal. What are the goals right now? Osama bin Laden, we believe, is now in Pakistan. What are the goals? Is it to rebuild the infrastructure of Afghanistan when our own infrastructure is crumbling? Is it to deal with a government there that is widely believed to be corrupt, not having the respect or sense of legitimacy from its own people, heavily involved, we think, parts of it at least, with the drug trade? So a lot of questions out there that I think Congress is going to have to jump into.
Definitely. Is there a chance, do you think, that the Congress will override the president on this and not fund an escalation in Afghanistan?
I would hope so.
Okay,
and what's going to be
too.
Very interesting is the people who will be supporting the president on this will be Republicans.
Yeah.
And I think progressives throughout this country should say, hey, Mr. President, we didn't elect you so that you'd be working with Republicans. We elected you to fight for a progressive agenda.
Right. So it is time for us to also speak up, not only to our elected officials in Congress, but to the president. Let the White House know our thoughts on Afghanistan right now. Okay. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. Now, the next question is health care. Today, the Senate is supposed to start debating the health care bill. This is certainly not the bill I had hoped for when I heard we were going to get health care reform. I know you've been very outspoken in terms of saying that you'll vote against it if it doesn't have a public option. But the public option that's in the Senate bill is not a very, it's very limited in scope.
That's correct. Here's where we are. The debate begins really tomorrow. And I have a number of amendments that I will be offering, as do other members, to strengthen this bill. The truth of the matter is, in my view at least, that if we are serious about providing comprehensive, universal health care to the American people in a cost-effective way, the only solution that I know on how to do that is a single-payer Medicare for All program. That's the cost-effective way. That's the conservative way, because you eliminate the hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars that have been generated by insurance companies for profiteering, for bureaucracy, for administration, for sales, for marketing, for all of these things which have nothing to do with health care at all. There are 1,300 private insurance companies, thousands and thousands of separate plans, each designed by the insurance companies to do nothing more than to make money. And that is the basic flaw in our system, which ends up costing us so much more than any other country per person on health care, and yet our outcomes are in many ways inferior. Well, the insurance companies and the drug companies are very powerful, and they have not allowed a single-payer approach to be really on the floor. I'm going to offer an amendment to that. We're going to try to get states to be able to go forward with a variant of a single-payer approach.
Is that sort of like the amendment that Dennis Kucinich offered in the House?
We're doing it a little bit differently than Dennis did, actually maybe a little bit stronger, but the same idea. And the idea is that if California or Vermont or Pennsylvania wants to go forward with a single-payer program, they should be able to get the waivers from the federal government to be able to do that. And, you know, we're making some, no guarantees on this, but we're having some progress. Where we are right now is there are good things in this bill, no question about that. But the weakest part, it seems to me, is the element of cost containment. Healthcare costs in this country are soaring, and I'm not seeing much in this bill to tell me they're not going to continue to soar. Nothing in the bill that tells me that at the end of the day, what you're not looking at are hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies going to private insurance companies who will then be able to continue to raise their rates in a fairly steep manner, meaning the taxpayer is really going to have to come up with huge amounts of money. And one of the functions of a single payer is not just to give consumers a choice about whether they want a private insurance company or a Medicare-type public option. The other point is, by providing competition to the private insurance companies through a Medicare-type public option, you can control soaring costs. And right now, as you have indicated quite rightly, the bill in the House has a weak public option. The bill in the Senate is even weaker. Mm-hmm. And we have an amendment in that will substantially expand the public option concept, which will provide some real cost containment.
And so is there someplace we can find out, or do we have to wait until you introduce these amendments before we can get on our senators and ask them to support it?
They become public knowledge as soon as they are formally submitted. We have not submitted ours yet. I think we will within a day or two.
Okay.
But all of that stuff becomes public knowledge, I think, as soon as it's submitted.
Terrific. Then I will make it my responsibility to keep track of those, and as soon as they're available, post them on my blog at RadioOrNot.com so people know that then they can write to their senators.
Absolutely. And the other element here, I mean, this is, if you don't do single payer, what you end up with is just an extraordinarily complicated bill, and that is the case. This is 2,000 pages, very, very complicated. But here's another issue. If you end up with $800 billion to $1 trillion in subsidies over a 10-year period, where does that money come from? How are you going to pay for it? Well, in the Senate bill, certainly against my desires, there's now language to raise over $400 billion of that money. No, I beg your pardon. No, less than that. I think about $150 billion of that money. tax on so-called Cadillac plants. And my concern is that what is a so-called Cadillac plan today is going to be a broken-down old car plan in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, not only that, the cattle, they're saying $8,500 a year.
Exactly.
Well, I know a lot of people who are self-employed who are struggling in with private insurance with $5,000 deductibles and stuff. They don't want a Cadillac plan, but that's the least expensive thing that they can
get.
And now they're going to be hit with a double whammy.
That's right, Nicole. So we don't want, and there are other instances where workers have given up pay benefits, pay increases in order to get improved health care. So I don't want to see this tax come on the middle class and people who have struggled for a halfway decent plan. Mm-hmm. The House in this area is much better. They've come up with a surtax on upper-income people, and I think that's far preferable. We'll be having an amendment to make sure that whatever is passed is funded progressively. So there is a lot of work to be done. We certainly need support from people all over this country to demand that this become as progressive a piece of legislation as is possible. And as I have said in the past, if it's not, I have been very, very clear to the leadership not to count on my vote.
Wonderful. And that's the issue that, you know, it seems like people are making this or a left or a right argument. Well, the way the bills stand in both houses right now, I'm against them. Although the arguments the Republicans are making against them are flawed arguments. I don't agree with them on their arguments, but if this is the final bills as they wind up coming out of both houses or the merged bill out of committee, then it shouldn't pass.
Well, and that, you know, where we are right now, and it's a sad state. It really speaks to the sad state of you know, public consciousness, if you like, or politics in America, that apparently the only way we can provide widespread coverage to people is to essentially give huge handouts to the private insurance company and say, hey, raise your rates any way you want. Don't worry about it. Taxpayers will pay for it, but you're going to provide insurance to people. And that's just a very lame way, a very inefficient way, very costly way of providing health care to people. We could do a lot better than that.
Absolutely. All right. We've only got about a minute or two left. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. One more issue that's come up, and it came out of the House, really, an amendment put forth by Ron Paul and Alan Grayson to audit the Fed,
right,
is gaining some traction. And in fact, the whole idea of Ben Bernanke being confirmed for another term leading the Fed is something you're against, aren't you?
Absolutely. We have actually, I know Ron Paul fairly well from when I was in the House, and obviously he and I disagree on almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
But on this bill, we've come together, and we have introduced an audit the Fed bill in the Senate, which now has a lot of co-sponsors. It was maybe 24, 25 co-sponsors, I think. And basically what it says is you have a very powerful institution that the American people know very little about. It's an institution that has, in the last year, provided trillions of dollars of zero-interest loans to major financial institutions, and they're not telling us who received that, which I think is just totally absurd in a democratic society. So we have that amendment in the Senate. We have an amendment to limit the interest rates on credit cards to 15%, except in extraordinary circumstances. We have an amendment in which calls for the breaking up of large financial institutions. You know, if they're too big to fail, they should be too big to mm-hmm. exist. And it is my view that Chairman Bernanke should not be reappointed. You have a guy in Bernanke who was appointed by George W. Bush, one of the more right-wing presidents in the history of this country, who actually worked for the Bush administration in 2005 as,
right,
as chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers. And I'm not quite sure why the president wants to reappoint a Bush guy whose allegiance is not to the middle class, but to Wall Street and upper-income people.
Yeah, nor am I. Senator Bernie Sanders, thank you so much. You are my hero, and I love you. I love the work you do. Thank you for everything you do for us.
Thank you very much.
Keep speaking out.
The great work. Take
thank
care.
You.